Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Strange Statue. This is a story about a statue that my father gave me. So, my dad was stationed on Guam during the Vietnam War in the late 60s or early 70s. Shortly before he was stationed there, he was in California on leave and he met my mom. Forgive any incongruities. I never really paid attention to the military lingo, so bear with me. When my dad went back to Guam, he either brought my mom with him or scheduled a time for her to come and live with him, claiming they were engaged. I guess that was the only way to bring someone to a base. I have no idea. He did stress the fact that he had to say they were engaged after, you know, three dates, all in the same week. So my dad's job was working on the planes in the hangars because he wanted to serve, but he had ulcers, and I guess that basically bars you from serving in the field. He was in the Navy, so serving in the sea, the water, the big blue, whatever the term is, he couldn't do it. One day after work, near the end of their time on Guam, my dad had gone to this village and found this woodworker who had all these Native-inspired statues. He found one that he really liked. It was very unusual. And he got it because he knew my mom was into shit that scared most other people. He picked it up out of steel or stole it, I don't quite remember which, and brought it home. My mother was not amused. She hated it. Hated him for bringing it into a little bungalow on the base and wanted it anywhere else, preferably in the fire than in the house. My dad decided he was going to take a stand and keep it as an ashtray. Turns out that wood is highly flammable, and when he left his cigarette on it for about 10 seconds, the base started to smolder and released this nasty, noxious cloud of smoke. My dad, being a Montana boy, born and raised, peed on it. Because, you know, he had drunk a lot of beers and his bladder was full, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. Well, during the night, a huge storm started up. Monsoon level. Not sure if it was one or not, but Guam is basically puckering up its collective sphincter at the ferocity of it. Lasts for a few days, and my mom was sweating bullets that their departure would be postponed. She was a wreck. She knew that he kept the statue. His hiding place for it was next to the front door facing in, like it was waiting for someone to leave the door open long enough. My dad was always the prankster. She wanted to leave Guam, leave him. He's a jerk, and Guam had bugs as big as bananas. My dad, being a prankster, but also suave in his younger years, decided if she was still mad, he'd propose to her, win her over. Turned out she's still mad, but when he proposed, I guess he said the right words, dressed just so, sexed her up just right, whatever. She said yes, and so he gets up in the middle of the night, in the middle of a shitstorm outside, and they go find the base chaplain. Got married that night with a 5-foot-nothing barrel of a French man as my dad's best man, a delightful contrast to my mom's maid of honor, who was 6 feet 7 inches, a Polish transvestite. They got married by candlelight because the power had already been out for 2 days. Very romantic in a David Lynch sort of way. Shortly after the storm broke, and my parents, they left a few days later. So, when my parents got back to the mainland, they settled in Oxnard, California. Cheap apartment, shady part of town. My mom, being a bit of an ingenue, doesn't understand how a car could go into a garage one color and come out a different color with a different license plate. My dad informed her, it's a chop chop and you didn't see anything. My mom freaked out and spent a lot of her time heading out of town with one of her friends. They would go and explore ghost towns, investigate supposedly haunted places. Honestly, if she was in a horror movie, she'd have been killed 45 times. Blonde, perky, giggly, captain of the cheerleaders in high school. But life isn't a horror movie. At least not with a clear baddie. She investigated these areas and wrote in journals, and she and her friend had a great time. However, every time without fail, the statue, which my dad had given the name Koschitsky, thereby foiling my mother and her crusade to burn it on accident in a fire out in the desert away from anyone she may care about. Because my dad named it. Once you name it, you gotta keep it. The statue would be in a different place in the house. She assumed it was my dad getting a bit crazy. and she'd just tell me to pick a place for it and leave it alone. My dad had no idea what she was talking about and assumed she moved it. Yes, my dad assumed my mom moved it when she'd be out of the house for days on end. My dad is a great guy. Sometimes, though, his logic isn't so logical. The statue kept moving every few days, in the closet, out of the closet, on the kitchen counter in the morning, at the door to the patio. My mother at this time had given up reasoning with my dad and just kept replacing it back where it should be, on the entryway table, as a key bowl. It stopped moving when my mom got pregnant with my eldest brother. This was 1977. Remember how I said they got it on Guam in or around the early 70s? Yeah, so let's guesstimate. 6 years at this point. Fun times. However, it stopped. My mom is glad my dad was growing up because raising one kid would be hard enough, let alone an infant and a man boy. My parents got a kitten in the interim while they waited for my mom to give birth. The kitten never went near the entryway. The kitten saw reflection of Kaczynski in a mirror, freaked out, and hid. My dad got mauled by the said kitten when he was holding him and walking to unlock the front door. Kitten hated Kaczynski. The baby was born. Everything was bliss. Not really. Never bliss. Mom was snappish a lot, got stir crazy, started to attend college on off time to earn a microbiology degree. Last semester of school, she gets pregnant again with my second eldest brother. They move to a house in Camarillo. Kaczynski is placed in my parents' closet. Mom and Dad got another cat. Bliss. Not really. Never ever bliss. My second eldest brother, as a toddler, was a troublemaker and would regularly scare my mom to death, which I guess she's used to, but out of practice. She hadn't been out ghost hunting since before she was pregnant with the oldest kid. My second eldest brother hides in their closet. Then he started to cry. My mom hears a door slam and my brother's now screaming like a peeled weasel. My mom tracked him down in their closet and the closet door was jammed. She thought he was lying against the door and tried to tell a little baby to get away from the door. My mom then remembers that the door opens towards her. By that time, the screaming had stopped and just low moans and whimpers. The door unjammed and my brother's curled up with his hands over his eyes and five small scratches on his arms. Kaczynski is lying on its side, 2 feet away from him. Needless to say, my second eldest brother was well behaved for a while afterward, and my mother had put Kaczynski into a box in her closet and gated the walkway to their bedroom so wandering kids wouldn't get stuck in the closet. She figured she had ignored a mini earthquake, shifting the door and spilling the statue from its perch on top of the closet. My mother's rational. My mother is very, very rational. Then she got pregnant with me. At that time, my oldest brother was around 7. The second eldest is 3. My mom started having these fevered nightmares of a box chittering and scratching, of finding my brother bleeding out from bunches of 5 tiny scratches all over his body. My mom thinks she's allergic to me. That's all. Body chemistry, hormones, and possibly an allergy to the baby inside her. Nothing more. Normal stuff. I'm born. Everything is bliss for exactly 3 days. Then nothing is ever, ever bliss. The first cat gets hit by a car in front of my oldest brother. My second eldest brother is nearly kidnapped from a shopping cart. The next year, I'm still in a crib and a bookshelf nearly falls on me during the August 4th, 1985 earthquake. My parents stick it out another few years. Then my dad gets a job at Boeing in Washington State and we move up north. Kaczynski is moved from his box to a shelf in the garage of a house my parents have built for the little family. My mom threw herself into her work as a microbiologist at a hospital. My dad works long hours at Boeing. The boys are left to look after themselves for most of the day. Every day when not in school, my oldest brother gets into comics and becomes a bit of a shut-in. The second eldest gets into technology, playing Nintendo, messing around with a beast of a computer. What type? No idea. I know it was green and black screen DOS monster. Took it apart, put it back together. He's a whiz with computers and game systems. He sets the clocks in the VCR at 8 years old. I become the artist of the family, drawing, painting, doodling. I stay in make-believe mode for a long time. Oh, something I forgot to mention. It is unrelated, I'm sure, but I never spoke, never made a sound until I was 4. Everybody thought I was slow, special. Let us call a spade and say retarded. I'm not, I don't think, but I was certainly mute for the first few years of my life. Back to the make-believe. I would run around our yard, about 2 acres of it, playing with fairies, like little heterosexual boys shouldn't. I'm sure my dad was pleased as peach punch that his youngest was acting that way. He never dissuaded me from fairies and princesses, and eventually I got into less questionable make-believe things. I would explore. Things were lava. I would climb trees and rocks and be a pioneer. Those rocks and trees were also lava. Really, everything was lava. I would explore the garage. I would explore the garage. For a long time, I didn't realize that Kaczynski was visible from my height and what free floor space we had. The first time I saw it, I peed myself. I never had been in its presence before. I had never even seen it before. I saw it, and I knew in that cold pit you get when you suddenly realize you're fucked in the worst possible way that I was fucked in the worst possible way. I turned to the door that led from the garage to the kitchen and made a run for it. I made it to the door, opened it, turned around, and Kaczynski is staring directly at the door. It hadn't been there before. At least, I believed it hadn't been there before. Still, up on the shelf, up in the far corner, but it seemed to be facing directly to the door where I stood. I left the light on and locked the garage door. From that day on, I got yelled at for leaving the garage light on. I do this on purpose. The light keeps that evil thing from moving when I'm looking at it. I hate playing in the garage. I never do so again. I only go to the garage when I'm with a parent, specifically my mom. Eventually, I grew less scared, or I guess more appropriately, I forgot more often why I don't like the garage. When I was 9, I was playing with our only neighbor who was my age in the garage. We were making piñatas for a school project when she remembered she had to get home. She left through the garage kitchen door, and I'm trucking along, putting layers of newspapers on the piñata. Everything is fine, until I hear the sound of wood rubbing slowly against wood. I stopped and remembered why I didn't like the garage. I imagined I looked straight ahead of me, the left side of my face in the direction of where that beastly little statue sat. I was able to stand up just as the light bulb above me burst. I peed myself, screaming, running, stumbling, falling, scrambling. I made it to the door and fell through it just as my mom walked in from outside. The doors were situated such that if both the front door and the garage door were open at the same time, they'd hit and push against each other. I slammed the door open, and I felt the resistance of the door trying to shut on me. I heard a yell. I threw myself through the doorway and into the kitchen. My mom burst in from the front doorway, screaming at me to be careful. And what the fuck are you doing? I was in tears. My pants were wet. I had paper mache on my hands and now the kitchen floor. My elbows and forearms were skinned from falling, and I was in hysterics. I pointed to the garage door, and my mom took a moment to open it. I screamed again and pushed myself into the corner of the kitchen. She closed the door and confronted me. Why the fuck did you put Kaczynski on the steps? Someone could have tripped on it and broken their neck. Go to your room. I went downstairs to my room, crying, dragging, drying paper mache mush into my eyes and in my hair. It had a name. Oh God, it had a name. My mom came down 3 hours later saying that she replaced the light bulb and put Kaczynski back. She told me she was sorry for yelling and swearing, but that I could have hurt myself climbing up to the top shelf and taking down the heavy statue. Sobbing, I said, I didn't do it. Stop lying. I know you're lying, she replied. The light bulb broke and I ran. Kelly and I were working on the piñatas and she had to go home, and then the light broke after she left and then I ran. I didn't touch that stupid crappy thing. While saying that, my voice was getting higher. It was probably the only thing that gave some validity that I was telling the truth. The fact that my face was scrunched in terror probably contributed. Well, the light scratched up your piñata, so I'm going to finish papering it for you. Then tomorrow you can paint it. Do not let me catch you playing with Kaczynski again. She stood up to leave. I remember grabbing her hand. It was burning hot compared to my own. My own felt like I had dipped them in ice. I think it hates me, and I think it wants to hurt me. My mom looked at me, and her face kind of solidified. The subtle setting of her jaw, she looked towards where the garage would be, up and to the left. Okay, well, remember, it's just a piece of wood. I'll tell your father to put it in the shed. You have to be careful in the garage. You could have hurt yourself. She left me then. I didn't come upstairs for dinner. I didn't leave my room. I didn't do anything but recall the grinning face, the pincer-like beard, the five sharp fingers holding its head. True to her word, she forced my dad to pack up the statue and put it in our shed, a good 400 feet from our house. The shed then became the epicenter of strange shit. Noises of thunks, of chittering, of scratching and rubbing. I never stepped foot in that shed, not once. My parents started having marital problems after that, fighting, yelling, sometimes hitting, rough things. I started spending more and more time in my room or outside walking around our gardens, picking flowers and trying to find some peace. When I was around 13, I picked up some occult books from our local library and started reading up on witchcraft and Wicca, about charms and chants to help you feel protected and safe. I got online, drifting from neophyte webpage to neophyte webpage. I learned about empowering oneself with light and strength from the goddess and God. I learned about opening oneself to the knowledge and understanding of nature spirits, fairies. All the times I may believe I was talking to fairies, and I very well may have, in a rudimentary sort of way. This is getting awfully long, so I'll be brief. I was found by some semblance of comfort. Things like the wood statue don't bother me anymore. I know that things have rules, things have guises, fundamental laws that cannot break. I know what Kuczynski is. I don't know its rules. I'm not particularly scared of having it in my apartment. My girlfriend says it's inactive. I'm inclined to agree. However, I'm always open to suggestions about what the fuck this beastie is. That would be super fantastic. No place like home. Let me start by saying that I'm quite the skeptic. I believe that 99.9% of the time there is a reasonable and logical explanation for most everything paranormal that people experience. That said, I also keep an open mind for that 0.01% and believe that without the ability to disprove what took place, logically, the idea that it was in fact a paranormal incident has to be taken into consideration until proven otherwise. To the best of my knowledge, the following events are true. The stories have been told to me by my immediate family and took place when I was between the ages of 6 months to 3 years old. Being the skeptic that I am, I initially figured that my family was just pulling my leg, so I just smile and shrug it off. Over the years, I would occasionally bring it up with my mother, trying to get her to admit that it was all just made up. Her unrelenting insistence to the validity of her stories has caused me to change my way of thinking and just accept that these events did in fact happen. As I recount these events, you may come to the same conclusion that I have. Whether or not they were actually paranormal in nature, I can't say for sure, but my family certainly believes that they are. I know my family very well. We're close-knit, and if they were just joking around, I would have been let in on the secret by now. These stories aren't in any particular order, by the way. Back in 1977, my parents became the first owners of a new townhouse located in Ottawa, Canada. The street was cozy but inviting. At the time, it was a little ways out from the downtown core, but a good place to start a family together. They spent the majority of the first day and evening shuttling boxes from their respective home into the new place, and were tired enough to agree that they would just set up their bed, a nightstand with a lamp, and my crib. The rest could be unboxed and put in place the next day. My father, not unlike me, can fall asleep within minutes. My mother, on the other hand, won't fall asleep for at least a good hour or so after getting to bed. Just as she was starting to drift off, she heard a scratching on the hardwood floor in the room. She turned on the lamp, expecting to see a mouse scurry off, but was surprised to see absolutely nothing there. The scratching continued, and she says that she could pinpoint exactly the spot that the scratches were taking place, but nothing was there. When I heard this, I told her that being a brand new home, there must have been a mouse that was trapped between the floors of the house. She said she would have believed that at first, but other things that happened in that house would cause her to rethink that conclusion eventually. As the months went on, my mom would occasionally have a feeling of unease, the kind of feeling you'd get when you were sure that you were being watched. She commented on this to my father a few times, and He would usually chuckle and tell her that it was something that everyone gets once in a while. Over time, Mom became sort of accustomed to the feeling, so although the frequency of it wouldn't go down, her reaction to it would. She also spoke of a loud, cackling laugh that she would hear once in a while. My father would explain that it was likely sound bleeding in from other units due to the thin walls. One evening, however, as my dad was beginning to doze off on the couch, the loud cackle bursted out again. He jumped right up to sitting position and in a panicked tone of voice said, "What the fuck was that?" By this time, my mom had also become accustomed to hearing this laugh, so she just said, "See? Told you there was something." From that point on, my dad would be more inclined to believe my mom when she would bring up strange happenings. Now, our particular house was an N unit, therefore it was only attached on the one side. My parents knew the neighbors, and no one in that house laughed in that manner. As far as I'm concerned, there are plenty of possible explanations for the laugh. Perhaps it was a neighbor's friend who visited and laughed like that, or perhaps someone outside. I won't really know for sure. At one point, when I was a little older and graduated from my crib, my mother noticed that her Betty Crocker cookbook went missing. She used that cookbook practically every day. It was always located in the bottom drawer in the kitchen, along with other recipe books and dish towels, etc. One day, she went to grab it and found it was missing. She asked my dad, who denied doing anything with it. He, of course, made a joke that someone must not like her cooking. She looked everywhere for that cookbook, but never found it. This wasn't something that she walked around the house with. It stayed in that drawer in the kitchen when not in use. As they were packing up to leave, she found it. It was in our unfinished basement, under the mattress, inside the old crib that wasn't in use anymore. Perhaps I did this as a funny prank and then forgot? That's the only reasonable explanation I can think of. It's doubtful, though, since I was only 2 years old at the time, and afraid of the dark. In no way would I have ventured into the dark, unfinished basement. And here's another story. At one time, I owned one of those old Fisher-Price plastic garages, and by God, I loved that thing. On one side of the toy, it had a large crank. Now, above this crank was a bell. When the elevator reached the top floor, that bell would ding. I played with that toy enough that my mom became very familiar with that dinging noise. In fact, I'm sure it drove her absolutely nuts. Well, one day my mom and I were the only ones in the house. My dad was at work. I was being fed in the kitchen when suddenly my mom heard that dinging coming from my bedroom. It was going off at a rate of roughly one time per second. Now, let me clarify something. This was not a battery-operated toy. The only way to produce that ding was to crank the elevator all the way to the top. Something else was dinging that bell, and it was dinging it with enough force to be heard in the kitchen, which was one floor down. My mom went upstairs and listened at the door. The dinging continued. As soon as she opened the door to look inside, however, it ceased. Speaking of bells, there was also a bell that would ring once our clothes dryer had finished running. On a few occasions, it burst out into a frenzy of dings as well. My father once unplugged the unit, and the dinging continued until it just decided to stop on its own. If it was simply a short or faulty unit, one would assume that unplugging the dryer would solve the problem. But that wasn't the case here. Perhaps the dryer would keep a charge even after being unplugged. Sometimes my parents opened my door to see me sitting on my bed, staring at an upper corner of the room, just below the ceiling, and talking as if I was answering someone's question. When they asked who I was talking to, I would reply, "Just a friend." When they asked what his or her name was, I would shrug my shoulder and say, "I don't know." I have no memory of this, but I do realize that children have imaginary friends, and my imagination was pretty active when I was young. I explained this to my mom, but she shook her head and said that she could tell that these particular instances were different. I did have other imaginary friends, of course, but my flow of conversation differed with the normal ones. For starters, I would look straight ahead and not at the ceiling. And normally, I would be the one asking questions and receiving an answer from my friend instead of the other way around. Maybe I was communicating with a ghost. I have no idea. Here's another inexplicable event. On my first birthday, my family threw a party for me, at another home with the usual assortment of hats and noisemakers. The noisemakers were the common unravel when you blow into them kind. After the party, my parents and I arrived home and my hat and noisemaker were placed on a small table in the front hall. This was a wall-mounted thing with a mirror above it, the kind of a shelf that usually collects loose change and car house keys, you know? Anyway, that noisemaker would occasionally unravel on its own and make the noise, exactly as if someone had blown into it. This occurred perhaps a few times before my parents decided to remove it. I personally can't see how it would be possible for a targeted blast of air to affect the noisemaker, yet not blow anything else on that shelf around, including the flimsy paper party hat sitting right next to it. So my mother was always convinced that something was going on, and after a while, my father also became aware. Freaky laugh while he was half asleep on the couch, but the rest of my family were still of the mind that my mother was imagining things, or perhaps just going a bit loony. One night, however, they were all over at the house for dinner. My aunt, grandmother, and mother were in the kitchen working on preparing the meal, and the rest of us were in the dining room. At this point, I was either fully walking or was just learning to walk on my own. I forget. Either way, my family are very careful to childproof everything. So after they were finished with utensils in the kitchen, they would either put them in the sink or immediately wash and put them away. On this occasion, a knife that my aunt had just put away in a drawer suddenly flew off a corner of the kitchen counter, across the floor, and into the dining room. It flew quite a distance. And the strangest part of the whole thing was that not only was this the same knife that my aunt had just put away, but its flight originated from a location of the counter far away from everyone in the kitchen. This is the event that woke the rest of my family up to the possibility that my mom wasn't just telling stories. Our house was likely not the only haunted one on that street. It wasn't uncommon to hear about people moving out in the middle of the night. My parents had befriended one of these neighbors and were chatting the day before the mysterious move. There was no mention of going anywhere, but the next day they were just gone. I could make the assumption that these neighbors couldn't afford their housing and would have unannounced to keep them from having to explain why they would be moving so soon. But it wasn't just one or two families moving away. This happened many times, and always the same houses. They were not rentals. The houses would go up for sale after the family had moved out. My mom said that once in a while she'd try to strike up conversations with neighbors about strange happenings, but she would have to do it in a roundabout way. There was one couple who opened up about some of their own experiences, which I bet was quite reassuring to my mom. Put in the same situation, I don't know how I bring it up either. Somehow, I doubt I'd just say, "Hey, Joe, good game on the TV last night, right? Yeah, that was a crummy call, terrible ref. Anyway, you have any ghosts over at your place?" "We do." Fast forward many years later. I'm going to college and became good friends with a classmate of mine. I found out that he lived quite close to the street where my old haunted house used to be at. So one day while I'm over at his place, I tell him some of the stories, and we walk by the old place. He says we should just go ring the doorbell and ask the current owner about the place. Again, I have no idea how to bring this up, but I decided to give it a shot and leave my conversation open-ended. I ring the bell, and instead of coming to the door, a lady opens an upstairs window and asks us what we want. The conversation, to the best of my memory, went as follows. Me. "Hi, I'm the son of the original owners of this house, and I was wondering..." Her. "If it's haunted, yes, yes it is." "I was quite put off by the spirits when I first got here, but I told them that I'm here to stay, so they should just accept that and agree to coexist with me, rather than pull their pranks all the time. They've actually been quite docile ever since." Me. "That's good. Thank you for your time." Originally, I had this elaborate plan in my head to tell her that I wanted to take a few pictures for a walk down memory lane style of anniversary gift for my parents, but she got right down to the nitty-gritty before I even got past my introduction. This was the eye-opening moment for me. Having some completely random stranger just matter-of-factly state that the place is haunted meant that my family weren't just messing around with me after all, and brought a new sense of validity to all the stories that I'd heard. My friend, who likely thought I was pulling his leg, was also pretty shocked by what just transpired. Fast forward again to last year. My girlfriend had moved from a nearby suburb to a rental house on the street. Her house was located on another section of the street that isn't known to be haunted. I obviously had my reservations about her moving in there, and so did my mother. She moved anyway, and in the year that she lived there, I'd stayed over countless times and hadn't personally had any paranormal experiences at all, except for one small thing. My girlfriend and I both have iPhones. There's an app called Sleep Talk that's quite useful. Its purpose is to record your snoring sleep talking at night. We've also used it to record comedy shows or concerts we've gone to. It's great. Anyway, the next day, after we use the app to record our snoring, I have sleep apnea, and my snoring is atrociously loud. She was reviewing the sounds and came across one that was odd. It was a quite distinct whip crack followed by a huh sound. I'm not sure how to better explain it than that. She still has this noise on her phone, so I could try to rip it out to MP3 and just somehow post it somewhere and get some ideas. But in my mind, being the skeptic that I am, I could think of a few things that it could be besides. A BDSM-loving ghost? Anyway, she has since moved out of that house and now lives in another area of town with me. Now, there are a couple of theories surrounding why there are spirits in that area. One of them being that it was originally a burial ground, and the other being an airplane crashed on that site years before the houses were built. The plane crash news articles is apparently available in archives that my family have looked up, and I'm not sure how the burial ground story came to be. I've always meant to do my own research, but to be honest, I've just been too lazy. Now, I'm not going to mention the actual street that my house was on. I will, however, say that it's located in the east end of Ottawa. Well, there you have it. Even though my story may sound bland compared to others, I do assure you that it doesn't change that fact that everything I have told you is true. Absolutely true.